society in a way that had never... Miss Landon, a small, mousy lady with perfect teeth, was describing the cultural impact of cellular technology when Thomas raised his hand to get her attention. He was desperately bored. Everyone knew the cultural impact of cellular technology.
Yes?
She asked, stopping mid-sentence. I thought we were going to talk about the invention of the flat-tran soon.
Did I say that?
I think you did. Anyway, it just seems a little more interesting than this stuff. Thomas smiled to take away the sting of his words. Miss Landon folded her arms.
Who's the teacher here?
You are.
And who knows best what we should talk about each day?
Thomas smiled again. For what reason, he had no idea. He liked this lady, no matter how boring she got.
You do.
Very good. Now, as I was saying, you can imagine how much the world changed when suddenly every person in the world was connected by... Miss Denton had the patience of a snail. Thomas had been analyzing the 40 odd-shaped blocks on the table in front of him for over 30 minutes. He'd yet to actually touch one. Instead, he gazed at each separate piece in turn, trying to build a blueprint in his mind, trying to approach the puzzle the way his teacher had taught him.
"Would you like to take a break?" she finally asked.
"You need to go to your next class anyway." Even her patience could run thin, he supposed.
"I can be late. Mr. Glanville won't mind."
Miss Denton shook her head.
"Not a good idea. Once you run out of time, you'll start rushing things. You're not ready to rush things. For now, it's okay to take as much time as you need, even over several days. Give your brain a solid workout. Visualize what you've been analyzing while you lie in bed at night."
Thomas forced himself to look away from the blocks and leaned back in his chair.
"Why do we do so many puzzles anyway? Aren't they just games?"
"Is that what you think?"
"Not really, I guess. Seems like it works my brain more than any of my other classes."
Miss Denton smiled as if he'd just told her she was the smartest teacher in the school.
"That's exactly right, Thomas.
Now, off to Mr. Glanville. You shouldn't make him wait."
Thomas stood up.
"Okay, see you later."
He started for the door, then turned back to face her.
"By the way, there are 7 extra pieces. They don't belong."
Impossibly, her smile grew even wider. Sample after sample. Class after class. Puzzle after puzzle. Day after day. Month after month. Chapter 7 224.9.2 7:30 a.m. The knock on the door came precisely at the correct time, maybe a few seconds off. Thomas opened it to find a stranger staring at him, a bald man who didn't seem very happy to be there, maybe not very happy to be alive. He had puffy red eyes and a frown that seemed to be reflected in every wrinkle on his wilting face.
"Where's Dr. Page?"
Thomas asked, a little crestfallen. As much as he sometimes hated the routine, disrupting it made him uncomfortable.
"Is she okay?"
"May I please come in?" the man replied,
nodding down at the tray of food he'd brought. His voice had none of the warmth of Dr. Page's.
Yeah.
Thomas stepped aside, opening the door wider. The stranger rolled the food cart past him and up to the small desk.
"Make sure you eat it all," the man said. "You're going to need a lot of strength today."
Thomas really didn't like his tone.
"Why? And you didn't answer my question. What's wrong with Dr. Page?"
The man straightened, as if trying to make himself taller, and folded his arms.
"Why would anything be wrong with Dr. Page? She's perfectly fine. Make sure to speak with kindness and respect to your elders at all times."
Thomas had his response on the tip of his tongue, the sharp words that always felt as though they came easy, but he stayed quiet and willed the man to just go away.
"You've got a half hour," the stranger said.
His eyes never left Thomas, a dark, unnatural gaze.
"I'll be back for you at 8 o'clock, sharp. You can call me Dr. Levitt. I'm one of the psychs."
He finally broke eye contact and left, gently closing the door behind him. "I'm one of the psychs." Thomas had no idea what that meant, though he'd heard the term psych before. He had zero appetite. He sat down and ate, anyway. It seemed as though Dr. Levitt banged on the door far harder than he needed to, right on schedule. Thomas had finished his breakfast in plenty of time, only wishing he could have another hour. Another half a day. He might as well wish for a month. But he didn't want to go anywhere with this new guy. If Dr. Page was gone for some reason, he'd be devastated. When he opened the door, Levitt was just as bald and just as droopy as he'd been a half hour earlier.
"Let's go," he said curtly.
They walked down the hallway in silence. Thomas gave Teresa's door a wistful glance as he passed it. 31K. How many times had he seen that plaque on the door, wishing he could open it and meet the girl on the other side? What possible reason did these people have for keeping everyone separate? Surely it wasn't mere cruelty. How could Dr. Page be a part of such a thing?
"Look," Dr. Levitt said, snapping Thomas's attention back to the white walls of the hallway, the fluorescent lights above. "I know I've been a little unfriendly this morning. I'm sorry. Today's project has been quite an undertaking, and we have a lot riding on it."
He let out a strangled laugh that sounded like a frog being electrocuted.
"You could say I'm under a pretty fair amount of stress."
"It's okay," Thomas replied, not knowing what else to say. "We all have our bad days," he added nervously. What could possibly have this guy so stressed out? He wasn't the one taking all the tests.
"Yeah,"
Dr. Levitt grunted more than said. They got in the elevator, and the doctor pressed the button for a floor Thomas had never visited before. 9. For some reason, that had an ominous feel to it. The 9th floor. Would it have felt so haunting if Dr. Page were standing next to him? He had no idea. The doors opened with a cheerful chime, and Dr. Levitt exited to the left. Thomas followed, quickly taking in a desk in front of glass partitions. Beyond that, he could see the blinking lights of monitors and instruments. This floor was some kind of hospital unit, by the looks of it. Maybe something had happened to Dr. Page. Maybe they were going to visit her. Thomas tried to sound as nice and as at ease as possible.
"So, can you tell me what's going on today?"
"No," Levitt replied, then added a, "Sorry, son," as an afterthought.
Thomas followed Levitt past the front desk and beyond the glass. They continued down the hallway, passing door after door. But aside from the medical monitors outside each room, none gave up any clues. The doors were all numbered, but they were closed, and the walls of frosted glass were obscured with floor-to-ceiling curtains, firmly drawn. Thomas could swear he heard voices coming from inside one room, and jumped at a sharp cry that left no doubt. He kept walking until an echoing scream came bouncing down the hall behind them. Thomas stopped and spun around to take a look.
"Keep walking," Dr. Levitt directed. "There's nothing to worry about."
"What's going on?" Thomas asked again. "What's wrong with that?"
Levitt grabbed Thomas's arm, not hard enough to hurt, but not exactly gently either.
"Everything's going to be okay. You have to trust me. Just keep walking. We're almost there."
Thomas obeyed. They stopped in front of a door identical to all the others, an electronic chart next to it with a bunch of information too small for Thomas to see from where he stood. Dr. Levitt studied it for a moment, then reached to open the door. He just turned the knob when a commotion down the hall erupted in the silence. Thomas turned to see a door open, and a boy dressed in a hospital gown, his head bandaged, stumbled out, two nurses supporting him. He was staggering as if heavily drugged, and he fell to the ground. He then struggled back to his feet, fighting off the two people who had been helping him moments before. Thomas was frozen, staring at the boy as he fell again, then drunkenly clambered to his feet and attempted to run away, swerving from side to side as he headed straight for Thomas.
"Don't go in there,"
the boy slurred. He had dark hair, Asian features, was maybe a year older than Thomas. The boy's face was flushed and sweaty. A tiny red spot blossomed on the bandage wrapped around his head, just above his ears. Thomas watched in stunned disbelief. Then suddenly Dr. Levitt was standing between Thomas and the oncoming boy. One of the two pursuing nurses shouted,
"Minho, stop! You're in no condition!"
But the words faded to nothing. Minho. The boy's name was Minho. Now Thomas knew at least two other names. The boy slammed into Dr. Levitt, almost as if he hadn't seen him standing there. Minho's eyes were completely focused on Thomas, bright with dazed fear.
"Don't let them do it to you,"
he yelled, now struggling with Levitt, who'd wrapped his arms around him. Minho was way too small to break free from the man, but that didn't stop him from trying.
"What?"
Thomas said too quietly. He spoke louder.
"What's going on?" "They're putting things in our heads,"
Minho called out to him, eyes still wild, boring into Thomas.
"They said it wouldn't hurt, but it does. It does! They're a bunch of lying—"
That last word died in the boy's mouth as one of the nurses injected something into his neck that made him go slack, his body slumping to the floor. Within seconds, they were dragging him down the hallway toward the room he'd exited, his feet trailing along behind him. Thomas turned to Levitt.
"What did they do to him?"
The doctor, his demeanor wrapped in a surprising calmness, simply said,
"Don't worry. He's just having a reaction to the anesthesia. Nothing to worry about."
He seemed to like that phrase. Thomas thought about running. He thought about it the whole time he watched Levitt open the door, as he followed him inside the room, as he heard the door close behind him.
"I'm a coward," he thought. "I've got nothing on that Minho kid."
It definitely looked like a hospital room. There were two beds, both with privacy curtains. The one to the left was open, revealing a newly made bed. The one to the right had the curtains drawn, hiding whoever lay there. Thomas could see the shadowy figure of a body through the thin material. Medical equipment filled the room, as state-of-the-art as any of the equipment he'd seen in the labs during his tests. Levitt already stood at one of the displays, perusing a screen of charts and entering information. Thomas returned his attention to the closed curtain, the bed behind it. Levitt was a good 6 or 7 feet away from him, consumed by what he was reading on the charts.
"I have to see who's behind that curtain," Thomas thought.
He couldn't remember the last time an urge had struck him so powerfully. To his left, Levitt leaned closer to the screen, reading something in small print. Thomas went for it. He crept toward the closed curtain to the right and pulled it to the side, stepped around it, rushed to the bed. Another boy lay there, blonde hair cropped short, eyes closed, covers pulled up to his chin. Levitt was across the room in a second, fumbling with the curtain. He grabbed Thomas by the arm, yanking him away from the bed. Thomas had seen the boy, though, and he'd gotten a good look at two things. First, just like the boy named Minho, this kid had a bandage above his ears, a bright red spot of blood seeping through on one side. And second, he saw the name on the monitors. Newt. Three now. He knew three names. Chapter 8 224.9.2 8:42 a.m.
"What were you thinking?"
Levitt asked. He guided Thomas across the room to the empty bed.
"We need to follow medical protocols, honor our safety zones, take the utmost care. Aren't you aware of these things?"
Thomas almost laughed at the question.
No,
he replied, not trying to be sarcastic. He wasn't even 10 years old. Of course he didn't know those things.
"That boy has been through a surgery. He's fragile. There are germs. Surely you know about germs."
Levitt spoke with an eerie calm.
"Viruses like the flare."
"I'm immune," Thomas said.
"Aren't we all immune?"
"Most of you."
Levitt broke off, sighed, pinched the bridge of his nose.
"Never mind. Just please don't go through that curtain again. Is that understood?"
Thomas nodded.
"Now, I need to start prepping you."
Levitt held his hands out and looked around the room as if getting his bearings.
"The surgeon will be here in half an hour."
A bubble of panic had been growing for some time in the pit of Thomas's stomach.
"So that kid, Minho, he was telling the truth? You're going to do something crazy to my head?"
"Not something crazy,"
Levitt said, the strain of forced patience clear in his voice. He opened a drawer and pulled out a linen gown.
"Something vital. And again, Minho was just having a reaction to the medicine we gave him. It happens only rarely. We'll take care with your dosage, I promise."
He paused, turned toward Thomas.
"Listen, you know the stakes. You know that you're immune to the flare. You also know that the human race is in serious trouble. Am I right? Do you know all this?"
Thomas had only one answer for that.
"Yeah." "Then you understand why it's so important that you cooperate."
Levitt tossed him the hospital gown.
"We're studying the kill zones of the immune so we can find a cure. You are immune. And all we're doing today is placing a small instrument in your head that will help us understand what makes you different. I promise you'll recover quickly, and you'll be glad that we can monitor your vitals more efficiently. You won't have to get your arm pricked quite so much."
He made this last statement with forced cheerfulness.
"Now, that's not all so bad, is it?"
Thomas kind of shrugged and nodded at the same time. The man made it sound so reasonable to cut open a kid's brain. He looked down, turning the gown in his hands.
"There's a bathroom right over there."
Levitt pointed to a door in the corner.
"Why don't you get dressed, then get in bed? I give you my word that everything will be just fine. You'll be knocked out, won't feel a thing. Maybe a headache for a couple of days, and we have pills for that. Okay?"
"Okay."
Thomas took a step toward the bathroom when he heard a girl scream out in the hallway. He looked at Levitt, who met his eyes. For a long moment they stood like that, waiting to see who'd act first. Thomas did. He was at the door in an instant. He threw it open and practically jumped into the hall, feeling Levitt right on his tail. Just a few dozen feet away, a familiar scene played out in front of him. Two nurses, a man and a woman, were dragging a girl with brown hair down the hallway, and she was kicking and screaming the whole way. It was her. The girl from room 31K. Teresa. There was no sense in what Thomas did next. He ran after her. The anguish on her face and the fear in her eyes had finally burst that bubble of panic swelling inside him.
"Let her go!"
he yelled at the same time that Levitt shouted at him to come back. The nurses turned to look at Thomas and stopped, curiosity crossing their faces, maybe even a hint of amusement. That just angered him all the more. He picked up speed, already realizing that the entire thing was a lost cause. At least he would show Teresa that he tried. At the last second, he jumped, arms outstretched, as if he'd become a superhero, ready to take down the two. One of the nurses swung a forearm in defense, connecting with the side of Thomas's head. Sharp pain ignited along his cheek and ear as his world turned upside down and he landed hard on the ground. His nose banged into the wall just hard enough to stun him. He rolled over and looked up. Both nurses stared down at him, as if to ask, "What's wrong with you?" Even Teresa had stopped struggling, though her face expressed something completely different. Awe. Wonder. Could that be almost a smile? Thomas suddenly felt on top of the world. Levitt appeared, looming over him, a syringe in his hand.
"I thought we'd come to an understanding, son. I was really hoping I wouldn't have to do this."
He knelt down and stuck the needle in Thomas's neck, compressed the syringe with his thumb. Before he passed out, Thomas looked at Teresa again, their eyes meeting for just a few precious seconds. The world had already started to blur when they dragged her away, but he clearly heard what she called out to him.
"Someday we'll be bigger."
He had crazy dreams. Flying through the air with some kind of machine strapped to his back, watching the world below him, scorched and ruined and lifeless. He saw small figures running across the sand, and then they grew, getting closer to him. He saw wings, then hideous faces, then arms outstretched, monsters reaching for him. Luckily, that one ended before he got ripped apart. The next one was much more pleasant. Thomas, his mom, his dad. A picnic, by a river. He didn't know if it was a memory or a wish, but he enjoyed it all the same. It created an ache in his chest that he thought might linger for a very long time. At some point he dreamed about Teresa, the mysterious girl who lived so close, literally next door, and yet only one sentence had ever been spoken between them.
"Someday we'll be bigger."
He clung to those words, saw her say them over and over in his dreams. There was something so tough about them, so rebellious. He liked her for saying them. In his dream, he and Teresa were both sitting in the same room, his room, he on the bed, she in a chair. They weren't talking, just there, together. He wanted a friend so desperately that he wished the surgery would go on forever, leave him in this dream. But then Teresa started saying his name, over and over, only it wasn't her voice. On some level, he knew what was happening, and his heart melted in sadness. The harder he tried to hold on to the counterfeit moment, the more quickly it faded. Soon there was only darkness, and the repeated sound of his name. Time to wake up. He opened his eyes and blinked at the bright lights of the hospital room. A woman stared down at him. Dr. Page.
"Doct—"
he started, but she shushed him.
"Don't say a word,"
she smiled then, and everything seemed okay. Dr. Page wouldn't have done anything bad to him.
No way. "You're still under a heavy dose of drugs. You'll be woozy. Just lie there and relax. Enjoy the medicine."
She laughed, a thing that didn't happen very often. Thomas did feel floaty, peaceful. The whole incident with Teresa seemed almost funny now. He could only imagine what those nurses had thought at seeing this little kid charging down the hallway, leaping into the air like Superman. At least he'd shown Teresa that he cared, that he was brave. He sighed happily.
"Wow,"
Dr. Page said, looking over from the monitor she'd been studying.
"I'd say you're taking my advice to heart." "What did you do to me?"
Thomas mumbled, each word slurred.
"Oh, now you're ignoring my advice."
"I said not to speak."
"What did you do?"
he asked again. Dr. Page turned to face him, then sat down on the bed. The shifting of the mattress hurt something somewhere on his body, but it was a dull, distant ache.
"I think the psych told you what we were going to do, right?"
she asked. "Dr. Levitt?" She looked around as if to make sure he hadn't come back into the room. He wasn't there. Thomas nodded.
But... I know. It sounds horrible. Putting something inside you.
She smiled again.
But you've learned to trust me a little, haven't you?
Thomas nodded again.
It'll be so much better for you, for everyone in the long run. We can measure your killzone activity so much faster and more efficiently now. Plus, you won't have to come to the lab quite as often to extract data. It'll all be instantaneous, real time. Trust me, you'll be glad we did it.
Thomas didn't say anything. He wouldn't have, even if he could speak normally. What she said made sense. Mostly. He just wondered why Min-ho and Teresa had freaked out so much. Maybe their surgeries hadn't gone as smoothly. Dr. Page stood up from the bed, patted Thomas's arm.
All right, young man.
Time for you to let those drugs pull you back to sleep. You'll be doing a lot of that in the next couple of days.
Enjoy the rest.
She started to walk away, but then turned around and came back. She leaned down and whispered something into Thomas's ear, but his eyes were already closed, and he was fading fast. He caught the words, "surprise" and "special." Then he heard footsteps, and the soft thump of the door as it shut behind her. Chapter 9 224.10.7 12:43 p.m. Thomas's head healed much quicker than he would have guessed. Soon he was back in his own room, attending classes as if nothing had changed. Since the day of the operation, he hadn't seen a trace of Teresa, Min-ho, or the boy named Newt. Or anyone else, for that matter. Sometimes, as he walked down the hall toward his classes, he heard voices. They were distant enough that he couldn't quite tell which way they were coming from, but he was sure they were kids. It made him wonder what was wrong with him that others were allowed to interact so much. When was it going to be his turn? He wondered about it every day. At times, he could explain it away as part of the experiments. Maybe some kids were together and some were alone. Maybe they'd switch it soon. A bumpy line above his ear marked where they'd cut him open, but the hair had already grown over it and he hardly thought about it anymore. He figured soon he wouldn't even be able to feel it. Sometimes he got a deep, resounding ache inside his skull, as if a magical hand had reached in there and squeezed. Whenever he asked Dr. Page or his instructors about the implant, they simply told him what they'd told him before. It was analyzing his system, and they were always quick to point out how much less frequently he had to have tests done. That was something he did appreciate. Dr. Page constantly reassured him that there were reasons he was so isolated for now, that they wanted to take good care of him, keep him safe. The outside world was a scary, scary place, radiation and cranks everywhere. And she said they needed to understand the disease better before Thomas interacted with others, that his was a special case, though she never went into much detail. But she brought him books and a handheld entertainment pad so often that he couldn't doubt her kindness, which reassured him that she wasn't just making things up to appease him. She always made him feel better about his strange life. One day, he woke up with a blistering headache and a weighty grogginess like he'd never felt before. It took every last ounce of his willpower to get up and slog through the morning routine. He took a nap in his room at lunchtime and felt like he'd barely closed his eyes when someone knocked on his door. It startled him, but he jumped up to answer it, worried he'd slept through his afternoon class. The movement brought another wave of pain crashing through his head. His heart sank when he saw Dr. Levitt standing in the hallway, the light shining off his bald head.
"Oh."
It came out of Thomas's mouth before he could stop it.
"Hey there, son," Levitt replied, as cheerful as he'd ever been. "We've got a big surprise for you this afternoon, and I think you'll like it."
Thomas stared at him, suddenly dizzy. Hearing those words had triggered such a strong moment of déjà vu that he thought he might still be sleeping.
"Okay,"
he said, trying to hide his discomfort. Any change in his daily schedule was welcome.
"What is it?"
Dr. Leavitt had an odd, nervous smile.
"We, the Sykes," the man said through a shifty grin, "have decided it's time for you to have some interaction with others. We're, going to start you off with Teresa. How does that sound? Would you like to meet her and spend some time with her? Maybe things will go a little better than your first, unofficial meeting."
His smile grew bigger, but it didn't touch his eyes. It had been a long, long time since Thomas had felt anything like what burned inside him at that moment. He wanted to meet Teresa more than anything else in the world.
"Yes," he said. "Absolutely. I think I'd like that very much."
During the walk, that strange déjà vu came over him again, as if he'd made this exact same walk with the exact same purpose before. The man guided him into a small office on his floor, the only furniture a desk with nothing on it, a couple of chairs on either side. The girl named Teresa was already sitting in one of the chairs, and she gave Thomas a very shy smile. The feeling hit him even stronger than before, almost making him stumble. Everything about the episode, the room, Teresa, the lighting, felt so familiar that it seemed impossible that it was happening for the first time. Confusion clouded his mind.
"Have a seat," Leavitt said, gesturing impatiently.
Thomas tried to compose himself. He sat, and the man stepped back out into the hallway, pulling the door almost completely shut.
"We thought it was time we let you guys have a chit-chat," he said, then added with a quick smile, "Enjoy,"
and closed the door. There was another strong wave of familiarity. Thomas couldn't stop staring at where the man had been standing moments before, too embarrassed to turn his attention to Teresa. He felt so awkward. A few minutes ago, he'd been excited. Now he was 2 seconds from getting up and running away, baffled by the strange rush of feelings. Finally, he shifted in his chair, forcing his gaze to flick to her, and found that she was staring at him. Their eyes met.
"Hey."
It was the best he could do.
"Hi,"
Teresa replied. She gave another shy smile, a smile Thomas could swear he'd seen at some point before today, in this very room. But now wasn't the time to dwell on what might have happened. He had all the time in the world to think about the weirdness later. He motioned around him.
"Why did they put us in here?"
"I don't know. They wanted us to meet and talk, I guess."
She hadn't gotten his point. He wondered if maybe that was her attempt at sarcasm.
"How long have you lived here?"
"Since I was 5.
Thomas looked at her, tried to guess her age, gave up.
So 4 years, she said.
"You're only 9?
"Yeah. Why? How old are you?"
Thomas wasn't sure he knew the answer to that question. He figured that was close enough.
"Same. You just seem older is all. I'll be 10 soon. Haven't you been here just as long?"
"Yeah."
Teresa shifted in her seat, pulled one of her legs under her body and sat on it. Thomas didn't think it looked particularly comfortable, but loved that she seemed a little more at ease. The same was true for him. The more they spoke, the more that disorienting pulse of déjà vu retreated to the background.
"Why do they keep some of us separate?" she asked. "I can hear other kids screaming and laughing all the time, and I've seen the big cafeteria. It's gotta feed hundreds."
"So they bring your food to your room, too?"
Teresa nodded.
3 times a day. Most of it tastes like a toilet."
"You know what a toilet tastes like?"
He held his breath, hoping it wasn't too soon for a joke. Teresa didn't miss a beat.
Can't be worse than the food they give us.
Thomas let out a genuine laugh that felt great.
Heh, you're right. There must be something different about us, Teresa said, suddenly getting serious.
It threw Thomas a bit.
Don't you think?
Thomas gave his best impression of an intelligent, thinking nod. He didn't want to give away that the idea had never occurred to him.
I guess. There has to be a reason we're kept alone. But it's hard to guess what when we don't even know why we're here.
He frowned on the inside, hoped it didn't show on the outside. He'd said the word guess twice, and the whole thing had sounded stupid. Teresa didn't seem to think so.
I know. Is your life pretty much school stuff from the wake up to lights out?
Just about. Teresa nodded, then said almost absently,
They keep telling me how smart I am.
Me too. It's weird.
I think it all has something to do with the flare. Did your parents catch it before Wicked took you?
All the joy Thomas had started allowing himself to feel came to a grinding halt. He suddenly saw his dad, drunk with rage, his mom saying goodbye to him when he wasn't even 5 years old. He tried to shut the vision out.
I don't want to talk about that, he said. Why not?
Teresa asked.
I just don't. Fine, then. Me neither.
She didn't seem mad.
Why are we in here anyway?
Once again, he gestured at the tiny room where they sat.
Seriously, what are we supposed to be doing?
Teresa folded her arms and let her leg drop back down to the floor.
Talking? Being tested? I don't know. Sorry being around me is so boring for you.
Huh? Now you're mad?
No, I'm not mad. You just don't seem very nice. I kind of liked the idea of finally having a friend.
Thomas wanted to slap himself.
Sorry. That sounds kind of good to me, too.
He didn't know if this meeting could have gone any worse. Teresa let him off the hook with another smile.
Then maybe we passed the test. Maybe they wanted to see if we'd get along.
Whatever, he said with a smile of his own.
I quit guessing about things a long time ago.
After a long pause, she said,
So, friends?
Friends. Teresa held out her hand over the desk.
Shake on it.
Okay. He leaned forward, and they shook on it. Teresa sat back in her chair, and her expression shifted again.
Hey, does your brain hurt sometimes? I mean, not just like a normal headache, but deep down inside your skull?
Thomas could only imagine the look of shock on his face.
What? Are you serious?
Yes! He was just about to bring up his terrible morning headache, maybe even the feelings of having done this before, when she held a finger to her lips.
Quiet. Someone's coming. We'll talk about it later.
How she'd known, Thomas had no clue. He hadn't heard anything, but someone knocked at the door a moment after she spoke. A second later, it opened, and Dr. Levitt popped his head through the crack.
Hello, kids, he said brightly.
He looked from Thomas to Teresa.
Time's up for today. Let's get you back to your rooms. We think this went well, so there'll be plenty more opportunities to get to know each other.
Thomas exchanged a glance with Teresa. He wasn't totally sure what her eyes said, but he really did believe he had a new friend. They got up from their chairs and moved toward Levitt. Thomas was thankful for even the short time they'd been given, and would keep his fingers crossed that the good behavior would truly lead to more meetings, as promised. They were at the door when Teresa stopped and asked Dr. Levitt a question. Two, actually. And it was enough to change the man's demeanor completely.
What's a swipe trigger? And is it true that 7 kids died during the implant surgeries?
The questions stunned Thomas. He turned to look at Teresa as the doctor fumbled for an answer.
How?
the man began, then stopped, realizing at the same moment what Thomas did. Teresa had stumbled on something major, something true.
"Where would you come up with such nonsense?"
Thomas wondered the same thing. How could she have heard something like that? He never heard anything. Teresa shrugged.
"Sometimes you people talk when you think we can't hear."
Levitt was not pleased, but his voice remained steady.
"And sometimes when you overhear things, you don't hear the whole story. Let's not concentrate on what doesn't concern you, okay?"
And with that, he turned and started back down the hall. He didn't seem to care whether they followed or not, but both were right on his heels.
"This is kind of fun," Teresa whispered to Thomas, "walking along with my new friend."
He looked at her in bemused disbelief.
"Really? You dropped that bombshell about kids dying, and now you act like it's no big deal? You're so weird."
He tried to make a joke of it to hide just how horrified he'd been by her second question. Surely it was just a rumor. He felt better when she suddenly kissed him on the cheek, then sprinted down the hall, passing Dr. Levitt. Thomas definitely liked having a friend. But as he watched her run, that feeling of panic came back to him. What had happened to him today? From the splitting headache to the overwhelming sense of déjà vu, it made him feel off balance, scared to stand up for fear of tipping over, like he wasn't in tune with the spinning of the earth. He tried hard not to think of the worst possible answer. He tried not to think of the flare. Chapter 10 224.10.14 11:37 a.m. A week later, right after a particularly tough puzzle session with Ms. Denton, Thomas found himself once again in the small room, sitting across the desk from Teresa. Thankfully, none of the strangeness of their last meeting came back to haunt him. It had been the longest week of his life, wondering every minute of every day if he'd be able to see his new friend. The only answer he got from Dr. Page or his teachers or anyone else was that, yes, they'd meet again soon. Letting a whole week go by seemed the most effective torture method he'd ever heard of. And despite considering it many times, he'd never gotten up the courage to ask about the powerful episode of déjà vu. He worried people might think something was wrong with him.
"Hey, good to see you again," Teresa said to start things off.
Levitt had just left the room, refusing to answer her question as to how long they'd have together.
"Yeah, definitely,"
Thomas agreed, pulling himself together. He felt too silly asking about the strange feelings he'd had last time, so he took another direction.
"Hey, I've been dying to ask you about those kids you said died. Is that really true? And at times Dr. Page somehow makes it sound like they're doing us a favor by keeping us alone. I feel like I've got a million other things I want to talk about, too."
"Whoa, not all at once," Teresa said with a grin.
Then she looked up at the corners of the ceiling, each of the four, with a worried glance.
"I wonder if we should be a little careful about what we say. I mean, they're obviously watching us, or at least listening."
"Probably both,"
Thomas said in a loud, mocking voice.
"Hello! Hello, old people!"
He waved all around as if he were in a parade, unsure where this sudden elation was coming from. Teresa exploded with laughter, making him do the same. It went on for a good minute or two, each triggering the other to laugh again just when they were about to stop. He was smart enough to know, however, that he was trying to avoid thinking about the deaths in question.
"Let's not worry about it too much," Teresa said when the chortling had stopped. "This is our time, and we can talk about whatever we want. Let them get their kicks."
"Amen,"
Thomas slapped the top of the desk. Teresa jumped in surprise, then laughed again.
"The stuff I heard about kids dying, I don't know. Probably just a rumor. I hope so. I guess I didn't hear it that clearly.
They could have been talking about something that happened before we came. I was just trying to get a reaction from Levitt.
Thomas hoped so badly that was the case.
So, anything new or exciting in your life? Teresa asked.
Can't say there is, Thomas replied.
Let's see.
I eat. I go to school. Lots of school.
Lots of medical tests.
Oh, and I sleep, too. That about sums it up.
Sounds a lot like my life.
Really? Shocker. Smiles. A pause. Then Teresa leaned forward and put her elbows on the desk.
I don't know about the other kids, or any secrets or anything like that, but listen. Our heads should be totally healed, right?
The question took him by surprise.
Yeah, you'd think so.
He touched the scar hidden by the hair above his left ear.
Seems like it, at least.
I'm sure our brilliant brains are just fine.
You mean what Wicked calls the kill zone?
Thomas nodded. He'd heard the word here and there, but didn't know much except the basics.
Yeah, seems like something they stole from a vid game. But Dr. Page says that's where the flare does all its damage. Isn't it so weird that we're immune? I mean, that should be the coolest thing in the world, that we don't have to worry about turning into crazy people.
Right.
But all it's done for us is landed us in this stupid place. Their name should be Boring, not Wicked. I'm seriously going insane from being locked in rooms all day.
Thomas looked at the door, pondering for a second.
Is it that bad outside? Is that why we're not allowed to go out there? It must be bad. You always hear that the radiation is weakening, but still pretty high in some places. All I remember is blinding white light outside the berg that brought me here. I've been through a flat trans and ridden on a berg, all before the age of 5. Can you believe that?
Thomas could just remember the big flying machine in which he'd also ridden. As sad as he'd been, he'd thought the thing was cool. Bergs were supposed to be for people who were crazy rich, but that was nothing compared to a flat trans. He'd never been through one of those. But if Wicked had them, they must have a lot of money.
When did you go through a flat trans? He asked.
Her face shifted from awe to sadness.
I barely remember it. I was born in the East somewhere. I lost my parents and got rescued.
She looked down and went silent. Maybe a topic for another time.
Hey, he said to change the subject. About that ache in our heads. I have it too sometimes.
Teresa's eyes flicked up to the corners of the ceiling again. Nothing visible hung up there, but they both knew that cameras could be hidden anywhere. And microphones. Wicked could fit hundreds of microphones in a place that size. Not to mention whatever had been inserted into their brains. Who knew what those things could monitor? Teresa stood, picked up her chair, and brought it around to the other side of the desk. She placed it right next to Thomas, as close as possible. She sat down and leaned toward him, pressing their shoulders together. She whispered in his ear, so lightly that he barely heard the words. Her breath against his skin sent tingles in all directions.
"Let's talk this way until they stop us," she said.
Thomas nodded, then spoke into her ear.
Sure.
He liked sitting close to her.
That ache in my head, she said so quietly. It's actually more like an itch. Like something's in there that needs to be scratched. It just about drives me crazy sometimes. I want to dig in there with something until I can scratch the itch, you know?
Thomas didn't know. That sounded even crazier than his deja vu.
I guess mine is kind of like that, he said, without much conviction.
She laughed, leaning away for a second.
Perfect response, she said aloud.
Then she leaned in again to whisper.
I know it's weird, but just hear me out. There's something in there that isn't being used. I heard the words trigger switch when I was coming out of the anesthesia. And it does feel like that to me. Like a trigger that needs to be pulled,
or a switch that needs to be pressed. Make sense?
Thomas slowly nodded. Dr. Page had actually said something also, hadn't she? She'd said special. He vaguely remembered that word, but it could have been a dream. These implants were a complete mystery. Teresa continued, her expression pinched.
I feel like there's something linked with my brain, something extra there. I've been lying in bed, concentrating until my head hurts from that. What are you concentrating on?
Thomas asked, bursting with curiosity now.
Using my brain as a tool, like conjuring up a physical thing in my thoughts, trying to use it on the implant. You know, like a hook to pull that trigger. Does any of this make even the slightest bit of sense? Of course not, Thomas said.
She pulled away, folded her arms, huffed in frustration. He touched her arm.
But that's why I'm interested.
She raised her eyebrows. He continued.
You seem totally sane to me.
She laughed.
And I'm pretty sure Dr. Page may have tried to say something about this to me. It's really got me thinking. Consider me curious.
She nodded, kept nodding, her eyes filled with relief. She sat up and came in again for whispers.
I'm going to keep working on it. Thanks for not thinking I've got the flare after all. But I mean, come on. These people have some crazy technology. They have flat transes and Bergs.
She paused and shook her head slightly.
My point is, these things they put in our heads might be integrated somehow with our actual consciousness, our actual thoughts. That's what I think.
Thomas, a little overwhelmed with this fascinating barrage of things to think about, put his lips right next to her ear.
I'll try, too. It'll be fun to have something different to work on.
She stood, a genuine smile lighting up her face. She carried her chair back to its original position on the other side of the desk and sat back down.
I really wish they'd let us meet more often, she said.
Me, too. I hope they're not mad about our whispering.
They're just a bunch of geezers, she laughed.
You hear that, Wicked? She shouted. We're talking about you. Wake up from your naps and come stop us.
Thomas snickered through the whole thing, but both of them froze when a knock sounded at the door.
Uh-oh,
Thomas whispered. The door cracked open and Dr. Levitt stepped inside. But any fear of punishment disappeared as soon as Thomas saw the man's face. He didn't seem the slightest bit angry.
Another session over, he announced. But before you go back to your normal schedule, we want to show something to the both of you. Something that's going to knock your socks off.
Thomas, not knowing what to think, and more than a little suspicious, considering how their session had just went, stood up. So did Teresa, a worried look shadowing her face. Maybe they were heading straight to the Chancellor's office for a reprimand. But Dr. Levitt seemed genuinely excited. He opened the door wider.
Okay, then. Prepare yourself for wonder.
Chapter 11 224.10.14 1:48 p.m. Levitt led Thomas and Teresa to the elevator, and all three of them rode it to the basement level, somewhere Thomas had never been before, then escorted them down a long hallway that ended at another bank of elevators. It was an entirely different section of the complex. Thomas and Teresa didn't say a word along the way, but they exchanged plenty of questioning looks. Finally, when the doctor pushed the call button to go down again, Thomas couldn't hold back his questions anymore.
"What's this amazing thing you're going to show us?" he asked.
"Ah, now," the man replied. "It's not my place to ruin the surprise for you. You could say that's above my pay grade."
He barked a laugh that echoed loudly.
"Some very important people are going to show you the project. I give my opinion on these matters, but I'm not involved in the actual fulfillment."
He didn't seem very comfortable talking about it. The chime of the elevator saved him from further explanation, and the doors opened.
Four people stood inside the car, and Thomas's breath caught in his throat. He recognized Chancellor Anderson and Dr. Page. There were another man and woman, each of them dressed very professionally.
"They're all yours,"
Levitt said. Then, without waiting for a response, he turned and retreated down the hallway they'd come from. Dr. Page held her arm out to keep the elevator doors open.
"Come on in, Thomas, Teresa. We're really excited about what we're going to show you today."
"Yes, we are," Chancellor Anderson said. He shook Thomas's hand as he stepped inside the car, then Teresa's. "We've been waiting and waiting for the Sykes to conclude that you two were ready. And here we are."
"What's going on?" Teresa asked. "Why all the mystery?"
The elevator doors had closed, and Dr. Page pushed a button to get them moving. A soft hum filled the air. Thomas wondered how they could be going down instead of up. The other bank of elevators had said they'd exited at the basement. He felt a small trickle of fear. Chancellor Anderson gave them his warmest smile. "It's nothing you should be worried about," he said. "We think the best way to explain what we're planning is to show you in person. You'll see what I'm talking about soon."
"But why us?" Teresa asked. "We know there are lots of other kids. We can hear them through the walls. Why are we separate? Are you going to show them what you're showing us?"
The woman Thomas had never seen before stepped forward. She was short, with dark hair and a pale complexion.
"First, introductions, shall we? My name is Katie McVoy, and I'm an assistant vice president with special oversight of the production you're about to see. This," she pointed at the other man, a serious-looking man with darker skin, gray hair, and stubble on his cheeks, "is Julio Ramirez, our current chief of security."
As hands were shaken and smiles shared all around, Thomas wondered about the word she'd used, "current." It seemed weird that she would describe the man's job that way, almost as if he wouldn't be holding the position much longer. Ms. McVoy continued,
"Regarding your questions, several of you have done leaps and bounds better than anyone else in the schooling and testing we've conducted here. Now, we're as pragmatic as anyone, especially in today's world, and we see the value in your skills and smarts. Today is a reward of sorts. You'll be the first subjects to see this."
"That's right," Anderson said with a bright smile.
"Reward is a good word for it. You two and a few others are off the charts and perfect for what we're going to need over the next 2 years to finish what we've begun. And we should be arriving. Ah, there we go."
The car came to a stop, having plummeted to the Earth's core, for all Thomas could tell. The journey, combined with everything he'd just heard, had him feeling even more uneasy than when he'd stepped into the elevator. Who were these others they were talking about? Of all the new things that were apparently about to be opened to him, having other kids around excited him the most by far. The constant loneliness had begun to eat away at his heart. But it also sounded too good to be true. Could he believe it? The doors had opened while he was lost in thought, and the others had all exited. Teresa stood across the threshold, gesturing for him to follow. She looked as if she was worried the whole thing might be canceled if he didn't snap out of it and get moving. Thomas felt the same way. He stepped out of the car into a large room about the size of a gym, its exposed ductwork lit with blue lights. It was empty except for the hundreds of cords and tubes waiting to be connected, countless boxes and construction materials. One corner held what looked like an office. It was set up with multiple monitors and workstations, all lighting the space with their electric glow.
"Our plan," Chancellor Anderson said, "is for this to be the command center for what we're calling the Maze Trials, as advanced a facility as any research institution has ever had. This should be finished within a couple of months, and then the two mazes themselves completed within 2 or 3 years, maybe 4.
He'd been looking around the room proudly, but when he turned back to face Thomas and Teresa, he froze, surprised. Thomas imagined that was because he himself must look completely confused. Teresa asked the question for both of them.
"The Maze Trials?
Chancellor Anderson opened his mouth to answer, but seemed at a loss for words. Ms. McVoy came to his rescue with a polished grin.